The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
One of the topics covered in Parashas Nosoi is the Parashas of Seta, a wife who is not loyal and commits adultery. This is in Bamidbar Hei, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, Hashem said to Moshe saying, Daber al bnei Yisrael v'mat aleihem ish ish kisiste ishtei omol avay mol. If you have a case where a woman turns aside from her proper conduct and she rebels against her husband and she commits an unloyal act where she lives with another man. And then the Torah goes at length to tell us the details of the laws relevant to this. In summation of the parsha, we actually find three different halachos regarding adultery. One is, if a woman and a man commit adultery, and there are witnesses to the fact, and it's intentional, then the Torah tells us that this is a very serious act, and it's punishable by death, both of the adulteress and the adulterer. If there were witnesses, proper witnesses and proper warning, during the time of the Sanhedrin, of the great court, that's the first halacha, the first case. A second case is if the act was committed, but there was only in the presence of one witness, then that's not sufficient to ascertain anything. So there is no punishment, and she can return to her husband. A third case is if there's what the Torah calls kinui vestira, that the husband becomes suspicious that his wife is seeing another man, and he warns her of this before two witnesses, and she goes, and in the presence of witnesses she goes into a secluded place with this man. If there was a witness present who will testify that she physically lived with this man, then because there's only one witness, she cannot be punished, but nevertheless she's no longer permissible to live with her husband. Her husband must divorce her. She cannot be punished with the capital punishment because there was only one witness. But on the other hand, since there was this kinui vestira, there was a warning, and there was a warning, and she went into seclusion, and this was ascertained, and there was one witness that claims that he saw the act, so then in that case she no longer can return to her husband. So that's the third case. Actually, I think I mentioned three cases. There are four cases. The fourth case is actually the specific case that our parsha is referring to, and that is if there was kinui and stira. The husband warned her, do not go with this person. This took place before two witnesses, and then she went into seclusion, and two witnesses testified to this with this particular man, but we don't know what took place. And she claims that she did nothing wrong. That's what is known as Sofek Seita. And that's what our parsha is referring to. We cannot give her any punishment because there were no witnesses. On the other hand, she cannot return to her husband because there was what the Gemara calls raglaim ledover. There's a strong circumstantial evidence that an improper act took place. On the other hand, though, we are not certain that the improper act took place. So the halacha is she is not allowed to return to her husband, and only if her innocence can be proven by the procedure which is written in the Torah, in this parsha, then she can return to her husband. What's the procedure? Well, first we try to get her to confess if such an act took place. But if not, she brings a specific sacrifice. And then the waters are taken from the kior, from the fountain, which is in the Mishkan, the sanctuary of the Beis HaMikdash. And the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is written on a parchment and is put placed into the waters. It's erased in the waters. This is all done by the Kohen. And then she's given to the waters to drink. If she's guilty, the Torah tells us that the waters will kill her and the adulterer. If she's innocent, then the waters will be a brocha for her. There'll be a blessing. And by nothing happening to her, this will prove her innocence. And she's able to return to her husband. So basically we have that where we know an adulterous act took place, then this act is punishable by capital punishment if it's done with intent and warning, and she's not allowed to return to her husband. If it's a case where we don't know, but there was this warning and this seclusion beforehand, then she cannot return to her husband because of all the circumstantial evidence until her innocence is proven. And the Torah gave a way where her innocence can be proven, since we have no other way we can prove it. And that's in the procedure on Ad Parsha. And that's through this Mayim, this waters, and the Kain, and the Mechikas Hashem, where you take the Hashem's name and you place it in the parchment, write it on the parchment and place it in the waters. And this will be Beidik, this will inspect her to either find her guilty or innocent. Again, if she's guilty, then both her and the adulterer will die. If they're innocent, then she will be blessed and she'll be able to return to her husband. So through the waters, which enabled her to prove her innocence and be returned to her husband. Now, so we are speaking in general of what is known as Isa Resh Ish, that a person is not allowed to take a married woman. A married woman is not allowed to live with another man. This is in the category of what is known as Giloy Arayish, which means forbidden unions, forbidden sexual unions, that the Torah writes in several places. And this specific type of a married woman is mentioned. It's mentioned in Parshas Achrei Mos, which is by Yikra Yud Ches Chof. There the Torah writes, V'isha el acheso le'sikoch. No, excuse me, Yud Ches Chof, that's not the right one. Ve'el eishes amischo le'isite ishoftecho le'zora le'tomavo. That a person should not approach another man's wife. And again it's written in the next parsha in Kedoshim, Chof, Kedoshim Chof, Vayikro Chof, Posuk Yud. Here the Torah writes, the man takes and physically lives with another man's wife, they shall both be put to death. It's written a third time in Aseres Adibros, the Ten Commandments, both in Parshas Yisra and in Parshas Veschanon, where there it states leitinof, that a man or a woman should not commit adultery. This is from the mitzvahs which an akum, which goyim, the nations of the world, are also commanded on. As it states in the Gemara, learns it out in from the posuk in Bereishis Beis Chof Dalet. In Parshas Bereishis Beis Chof Dalet, after Odom, the first man, could not find, he told HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you created everything, and with everything you created a mate, except me, I'm alone. And the Almighty said, Leitev yeis Adam levada, it's not good for a man to be alone, and therefore he created a mate for a man also. And then he said, And Vayemar Adam Zeis HaPam Etzem Me'atzoma Avosem Ibsori Lezei Shikori Yisho Ki Mi'ish Lukoch HaZeis. And Adam was very, very happy with his newfound mate. He said, this is someone from my own bones and my own flesh. And he called her Isha, woman. So the Torah writes, Alkein Yazov Ishas Ovi Ves Imai. Therefore a man should leave his father and mother, V'dovak B'ishtei. And he should cleave to his wife, V'hoyu L'voser Echod, and become one flesh. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin darshins, V'dovak B'ishtei, he shall cleave to his wife, V'lei Eishas Chaveira, and not to another man's wife. Shall cleave to his wife, but not to another man's wife. So from here we learn that this is not only Azor, and not only a prohibition of the Taryag of the 613 mitzvahs to Israel, but this is also a prohibition of one of the seven mitzvahs that were given to the nations of the world. That they also are not allowed to take another man's wife. And, as we see, that it's given the capital punishment, where it is done with intent. That this is from the Averis Hamures, it's from the very serious Averis of the Torah. And this is something which has been respected, at least in theory, if not all the time in practice, but at least in theory, by all the nations of the world, since the Dor HaMabul. Since the generation of the flood. The flood during the time of Noah came onto the world. One of the reasons is because that they all changed from the ways of the Almighty, and this brought out the flood. After that, it states that Godru Esa'uma is Barais, that all the nations got together and they said that we would never want a flood to come upon the world again, such devastation. So they kept this moral code. And since then, the Chazal tell us it was respected by all of the nations of the world, at least in theory. We see even during the time of Abraham when he went to Mitzrayim, Egypt was one of the most abominable nations. And when Abraham went to Mitzrayim, he told his wife Sarah, say that you're my sister, because if they'll find out that you're my wife, they'll kill me and take you. What was the matter if they would find out she was his wife? Because they would want her and they would kill him. Why would they kill him? Because they were afraid to take an Ashishish, they were afraid to take another man's wife. It was a more serious crime to the nations to take another man's wife than to kill someone. See, Avram said, say you're my sister. Because if you'll say you're my wife, he says they'll kill me in order to take you. If they don't care about killing, so why do they care about Ashishish, another man's wife? No. This was universal that you couldn't touch another man's wife. And the same thing when Abraham went to Avimelech, Melech Plishtim, Philistines, which also were not from the great, righteous nations. Again, Abraham told Sarah, say you're my sister. Because otherwise, if they find out you're my wife, they'll kill me and take you. And the same thing Yitzchak had to do with Rivka. And even today, I'm not an expert in affairs of the Far East, but they say nations of the Far East. This is an unacceptable act. Adultery is punishable by death immediately. The nations of the East. This was accepted by all, I say at least in theory, if it was done, it was done under great cover. Until the modern West. And the father of the modern West, I'll tell us, was Esav, the Roman Empire. The Romans were the first ones to come and start to publicly rebel against this. Why, by them adultery meant nothing. And they gave it to all the European nations that were their heirs, to England, and to Germany, and to France, and to Austria, and all the nations. And this came to the West, to the point where today, they say the East, this is an abomination by the East. The East refuses to accept it. Fact is, I have heard that even Russia refuses to accept such theories. People who are somewhat experts in what's going on the other side will tell you that there are certain moral standards that are far greater and higher in Russia than in the West. Until today, we have where not only in practice this is not kept, it's classified as a wife swapping or an affair, but in theory it's not accepted. In theory, you go into the great centers of education of the West and listen to the great academic professors, and they will lecture on all the great advantages of adultery. They'll publish their works. And how these are things which are belong to the old world, not to the new world. The psychological and the emotional advantages and family advantages and so forth and so on. And their achievements with this and their fruits that they have misled generations. This liberalism, this we are witnessing today. What they have achieved with this, when we look at what kind of world we have here in the moral standard of the Western world. But regardless of what the great professors claim, Torah said differently. Let's see what perhaps there's a few observations we can make in this parsha that can enlighten the subject a little more for us. One point we see is that if there is an act of adultery, then the Torah forbids the woman to return to her husband if it was done with intent. Because this disloyal act is what is known mekalkula issus. It destroys the marriage. It destroys the marriage beyond repair. This is what we see from this halacha. This is again contrary to, there are those psychologists or professors you have in California, or you have in New York or other places, that have advised that to strengthen the marriage, sometimes an affair is very good. The Torah says there's no such thing. This is a total kilkul, a total destruction of the marriage. That's one point we see. Another important point is that even though the woman and the man, the adulterer and adulteress, who commit this act, even though they are totally guilty, we cannot vindicate them. But we see that the Torah also points a finger at her husband. In many cases, it might be that he is not completely innocent. Where do we see this? In our parsha, immediately before the parsha, this is the parsha we're dealing with, it speaks about v'ish es kedoshov lo yiyu, ish asher yitein ha'kain lo yiyeh. that when a person has his crops in Eretz Yisrael and he cuts from the crops, there's a certain percentage that he has to give to the Kohen. And there are various matonas, various things that he must give a share to the Kohen. So the Chazal asked, why? What's the relationship? It seems that these two parishes have nothing to do with each other. What is the relationship? Rashi brings Rashi says, Ma kosev lemala minyanim v'yishas kedoshev lo yiyah im ato me'akev matonis hakarin hayecho shetitztarek lovei etzlei lohovi leyasaseter. If you're the type of person that will not fulfill the commandments of giving the matonos, giving what you should do to the Kohen, then you'll end up having to come to the Kohen in order for him to go through this procedure to make your wife again permissible to you. This is the relationship between the two parshas. In other words, someone who does not fulfill the mitzvahs of Hashem will end up having a disloyal wife. What does this mean? In general, it means that in order for the marriage, in order for the zivug to be complete, then there has to be Shechinas Hashem. Kodesh Baruch Hu has to dwell in the house. And that's only done if the person fulfills mitzvahs. If the man is not what he should be, if he's not fulfilling mitzvahs, then the Shekhinah departs. If the Shekhinah departs, this can cause a rupture in the unity of the marriage. And this can cause an act of immorality. This can cause, eventually, lead to adultery. So the point that the Torah is bringing out, that even though the wife with her adulterer are the guilty ones, but it's possible that by her husband she was driven to such an act. Why does it particularly choose this mitzvah? This perhaps we'll see later in the shir. But this we see for certain, that if a man is not doing what he's supposed to do, then eventually this can lead with a total collapse of the house, even so far as to the act of adultery. We see this from other sources. The Gemara in Saita brings and Daf Yud Amar Aleph. Omar Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yechanan says, Kol mezane, ishtei mezanenes olav. If the husband leads an immoral life, then his wife will lead an immoral life. This will drive his wife to immorality. Shnemar, and they bring a pasuk from Iyuv. V'haynu damri inshe, and this is what people say, Iyuv bekori v'yitzosa bebitzune. There were two types of vegetables. There were two vegetables. One was called the kori and one was called the butzini. They were actually of the same type, except one was much larger and the other was smaller. So we say that if the man leads an immoral life, his wife also will lead an immoral life. They're both of the same kind. One's a little larger, one's a little smaller, but they're both of the same kind. See, here again we see this. A man cannot expect his wife to be loyal if he's not going to be loyal. A man cannot expect a high standard of conduct from his wife if he's not going to keep such a standard. And this is why the Gemara brings in Masechta Yevamos and Daf Samach Beis Amud Beis that the Chazal, our sages, cautioned us many times Because the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu that states, V'yodato ki shalom o alecho. You shall know that your house, there is peace in your house. Peace in your tent. The Gemara says whenever it refers to a house, a home, or it refers to a tent, this in particular is referring to your wife. Ein ohel ela ishtei. A person, the Chazal tell us, has to know that there is peace in his home. He has to create the perfection in his home. Therefore, the Gemara tells us that a person learns from this pasuk that a person has to take very good care of his wife. Because if not, then the house will start to crumble and these things will happen. From here the Gemara learns, for example, that if a person is going out of town, he has to show an extra amount of endearment and love to his wife. Or all the time, the Gemara says, he has to show a love and endearment to his wife. Or the Gemara learns from here, that he has to love his wife like himself and honor her more than himself in order to guarantee that there will be peace in the home. Now the sages are commanding us in all of this in order that adultery comes when the bond of marriage is crumbling. So it's the man's duty to guarantee that the bond of marriage will not crumble. If a woman commits adultery, she's guilty. But the cause could have been far before that. It could have been because the bond of marriage had started to crumble. And this was the man's responsibility. So therefore we are constantly cautioned, V'yodato ki sholem ba'olecho. You shall guarantee that there is peace in your home in order to see that the bond of marriage is strong. Then there will be peace in your home and these acts will not take place. That's one very important point. Another principle that we must understand when it comes to the phenomena of the zivug of marriage. A Chazal tell us that how will we describe the zivug marriage? Marriage is an achdus, a total achdus, a total unity. A total unity at all levels. At the physical level, at the emotional level, at the spiritual level, the intellectual level, at the spiritual level. The Gemara in Masechta Seita, in the beginning of the Masechta, states, caution zivugin shalodom ki kriyas yamsuf. This marriage is something which is not easily created. Something which should not be taken for granted. Because to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to make a marriage of two people, this is as difficult as it was as splitting the Red Sea. This is what the Gemara says. Koshes yivugin shalodom ki kriyas yamsuf. And why is that? So the Maral explains in his Chidush Yagodus in Seita. Both had a common aspect. The splitting of the sea was taking something which was one and dividing it into two. There was one body of water. And the water, with the force of gravity, binds itself together. The splitting of the sea was the division, dividing one thing into two. Zivugin shalodom, marriage between people, is taking two things and making them into one. States Meshiv Yechidim Beso. Kodesh Baruch Hu takes two individuals and makes one home out of them. Doesn't take two individuals and merely puts them under one roof. In that case, there would be explosion. He takes two individuals and makes one out of them. And this was a miracle, like the splitting of the Red Sea, because there you took one entity and you divided it into two. Here we take two entities and we make it into one. Now this is the whole concept of zivug, of marriage. To take two entities and make them into one. That there should be a total oneness. Right, from here now this gives us a little more insight. Why, if there is an act of adultery, this will be makalkul esa issues, this destroys the marriage. Because the essence of the marriage is a oneness. And adultery destroys that. Now to take two individuals and make them into one, this is something which is not a physical phenomena. This is something that cannot take place at the physical level. Because they're totally different. They're different in everything. People are people. Each one is different. There's a different chemical makeup. There's a different spirit. There's a different neshama. There's a different intellect. There's a different personality and character and everything. There could be not even thousands, but millions of differences. This has to be done by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do such a thing. Just like only HaKadosh Baruch Hu could split the sea. No one else could split it. So this union is not to be looked at as a merely as a union which belongs to the physical world. It's a union which rises above the physical world and becomes a miraculous spiritual union. And this is why the Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to take these two people and make one out of them, he had to use his name. He placed one letter of his name in the man and one letter of his name in the woman, and together he made one out of them. The yud he placed in ish, and the hey he placed in isha, and it, through his name he was able to make them into one entity, because his name is one, he is one. But Lulezeis, without this, never be successful. It's actually a medrash. The medrash says, Shol Matanusa, a noble woman, once asked one of the Tanoim, the rabbis of the Mishnah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very busy creating the world. He created such a wonderful world, but that he did in the first 7 days. What does he do after that? So he answered that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Eisik b'shiduchim, b'zivugin. The rest of the days he spends time making shiduchim. So she said, is this something that he has to spend all his time with? He said, yeah. She said, not so. It's not so difficult. Next day she went home that night, and she called out many, many of her slaves, men slaves, and many, many of her women slaves, and she lined them all up, and she says, here, you belong to him, and you belong to him, and you belong to him. And she made that night, she made 100 matches. And she said, see, it's not so easy, it's not so difficult. Next morning, there was an explosion. See, this one came with a broken arm, and this one came with a black eye, and it was all just fribble. Then she understood that to make a match, to make a marriage, is more than merely bringing two people together. You have to take the two people and make one out of them. And that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can, because they are two entities. And only he that could split one sea and make two, can he take two entities and make one. And this he can only do by placing his name in the couple. So he is one, he uplifts them, where they become one. And this is why we find his name in Ish and Isha, and we also find the Yud and Hey in the Kriya Shamsuf, in the Shira, in the song which Meisha sang. So it states, Ozi v'zim rishyo. Then Meisha sang, Ozi v'zim rishko, that my strength and my song is Hashem, and is written the Yud and the Hey, to teach us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used these letters to split the sea. So this is why the Gemara compares the two of Kosher Zivug and Shalodim Ki Kriyas Yamsuf. So from here now we see another level, that the unity of the marriage is built on the level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That it's a unity and it's a perfection that comes at the level of the Shem Hashem. Now, with this we can understand a few things that Rashi brings out in our parsha. The beginning of the parsha it states, "Daber al bnei Yisrael v'amat aleihem." Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, "Ish ish kisiste ishte umal avay moal." Any man whose wife turns aside and she rebels against him, she's unfaithful to him. It states ish twice, ish ish. What does it mean? It mentions man twice. So in the simple sense would mean, it means any man. But there's a deeper meaning. Rashi writes, Ish ish Lelam dechoshe me'eles b'shtayim B'ish melchome shol mala v'ish shol melmato. She becomes disloyal to two men. When she's unfaithful to her husband, she's unfaithful to two men. To her husband, and to the one who's known as Ish Melchoma, the man of war, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She becomes unfaithful to both. Why does she become unfaithful to both? Because not only is she destroying the unity between she and her husband, she's destroying the unity which HaKadosh Baruch Hu also has there. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is in both of them, and he dwells amongst them. States if he removes his yud from ish and his hay from isha, then the two words spell ish ish, fire. They consume each other. And this is what's taking place. So she's not only becoming unfaithful to her husband, but she's also becoming unfaithful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that dwells amongst them and that holds them together. That's why it states ish ish. Same thing, a little further, it states that she should bring her korban, she brings her sacrifice. It says minchas kinosu. This is a sacrifice of jealousy. In other words, this is to represent the jealousy which her husband had. But there's one thing, one problem. It doesn't say minchas kinas, it says minchas kinoos in the plural. She brings her sacrifice of jealousies. So Rashi brings ma'eres aleo shtei kinas, kinas hamokom v'kinas habaal. There are two jealousies here. There's the jealousy of the Almighty and the jealousy of the husband. What's the Almighty have to do with it? Because he is holding them together and she is rebelling against it. So this brings out a jealousy of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a jealousy of her husband. Lefizeh, accordingly, when there is a disloyal act, then it's going to have to destroy the Shekhinah, destroy the Shem Hashem which is amongst them. Because if the name of Hashem is in this marriage and it's holding the two together and making one from them, but once there's a disloyal act and this ruptures this, it's going to destroy the name of Hashem which is amongst them. And this is what Gemara says. Gemara says that this type of disloyalty chases the Shekhinah away from them. Gemara brings this in the beginning of Seder. Gemara says, Rav Chisda says that before Klal Yisrael sinned with adultery, the Shekhinah dwelled in everyone's house. As it states, Hashem Elokecha mishalech bekerev machanecha, Kodesh Baruch Hu dwells in your camp. Kiven shechotu, but once they started to sin with adultery, Nistalko Shekhinah mehem, the Shekhinah was driven away from them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence was driven out. As it states, V'lei yiroh becho ervazdove v'shov me'acharecho, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not dwell where there's ervazdove. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not dwell where there's immorality of this type. And then the Gemara says, Omer Rav Chisda zenuse bebeiso, ki karye l'shum shema. When there's immorality in the home, it's the same as a worm in the sesame seeds. If you have some sesame seed and there's a worm in it, slowly the worm will eat it all up. If there's immorality in the house, it says a person's money will be totally consumed. It'll be eaten up. Why? Because the Shekhinah cannot dwell in the house. And if the Shekhinah cannot dwell in the house, there cannot be any bracha. Because the source of bracha is the Shekhinah. This is similar to what we said before, that if the man himself does not fulfill the mitzvahs, he's going to drive the Shekhinah out also. And that can be the beginning of it. And certainly to the point where the disloyalty comes in, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot be there, because he's holding the two together. And they're driving each other away from each other. They're driving away from each other. So he must remove his name. If he removes his name, then it says that's like a worm in the produce. Your worldly possessions will be totally eaten up because there cannot be bracha. So the Shekhinah is driven out. Now, from here now, we can understand a little more in the procedure that the Torah writes here, how we can bring this woman back to her husband. See, we're speaking about a case where we don't know if she was disloyal. We don't know. The husband is very angry and he's very jealous, and he's lodging a complaint. He says, I warned her not to go with this man. And she went into seclusion with this man, and we have proof of it, two witnesses. But she claims she didn't do anything wrong. She shouldn't have gone with this man. That itself was an avera. But she claims more than that, she didn't do. So the Torah here prescribes that her innocence can be proven through the mayim, through these waters. So firstly, it states that all of this must be done through the Kohen. Only the Kohen can administer this procedure. Why the Kohen? Maral writes in Gurai, the Kohen had a specific role where he was known to be the one who was maybe Shalom. In general, Aaron HaKohen is a Mishnah Masechet Ovis that says that you should be Mitalmidim Shel Aaron HaKohen. You should be from the disciples of Aaron. Aaron was the first Kohen. What was the quality of Aaron? Aaron was Eiv Es HaSholom, Reidiv Es HaSholom, Eiv Es HaBriyas U'Mekarev in the Torah. Aaron loved peace, and he pursued peace. And he loved people, and he brought them to Torah. And the commentaries explain there this, that he brought them to Torah. This was all in the name of peace, because he was bringing them closer, Lavinu Shevishamayim, to their fathers in heaven. Why was this the quality of Aaron? Because this was the duty of the Kohanim. What was the duty of the Kohen? The Kohen was the one who brought all the sacrifices, the korbanos in the Beis Hamikdash. What were the korbanos for? The word korban comes from the word korov. Through a korban, Klal Yisrael became closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They brought a korban and it was reach, nichayach, eilel Hashem. It went up to Hashem. And it brought people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So who could bring Yisrael closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The Kohanim had the specific ability to bring Yisrael closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this also was a zivug, because Klal Yisrael is always symbolized as a wife, and the Almighty as the Baal, as the husband. Also two entities, but they become one. Yisrael, Bekutshi Brichu Chadhu. Kodesh Baruch Hu and Yisrael are one. But who made them one? This is the Kohanim. This came from the first Kohen, Aaron HaKohen. That's why it states you should be from the disciples of Aaron, who always try to bring the people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and closer to each other. The Medrash relates that he would spend a lot of time working on mending quarrels between man and his fellow man, and between man and his wife, to bring them together. Because this was his nature. This was his Aveda, to take many and make one out of them. Therefore, here where we want to return her to her husband and to return the oneness, the unity which existed before, we need Aaron, we need a Kohen. So that's why this parsha must be done all through the Kohen. Actually, now we have a little deeper insight into what we said before, that it stated that what was the previous parsha? That the man didn't want to give the gifts that he was supposed to the Kohen. Didn't want to give the gifts that he was supposed to the Kohen. In other words, he didn't hold for the Kohuna. Why should I give things to the Kohen? Who are they? Who are the Kohanim? I work hard in my field. Why am I obligated to give to them? In other words, he rejected the Kohuna. You reject the Kohuna, then there'll be division in Klal Yisrael. Because the Kohuna, through the Kohuna, through the priesthood, through the korbanos, through the sacrifices, oneness comes to Klal Yisrael. The Beis Hamikdash brought oneness. You reject the Kohuna, so there'll be division. And Chayecho, you in your own house, there'll be this division. And you'll have to come to the Kohen to mend it back together. This is what the Gurai explained. So there's a deeper, not only because he wasn't careful with mitzvahs and he drove the Shechina out, but in particular, he wasn't careful with the mitzvah of Kohuna. So here again we see, it's a great responsibility on the husband. You cannot merely put the blame on the shoulders of the wife. If you want unity, so you have to create unity. You reject Kohuna, you reject unity. So therefore it had to be done through the Kohen. And now we see that the waters that were used . Where did they come from? says the waters he had to take from the Kiyur in Kanai, from the fountain that was in the sanctuary. So the Chazal asked, why from there? Why did he take the waters from a river, from a mikveh? Why the waters from the Kiyur v'Kanai? Because we are working here on reestablishing, reinstituting this Achdus, this unity. This unity is not a unity that people can make. This unity is, we're speaking about a greater unity, the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that He made. For that type of unity, we have to go into the Sheirish HaKadosha, to the source of the Imos, of the matriarchs, and of the early mothers of Klal Yisrael that created such a unity with the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which sets a standard of Kedusha. And that's the significance of the Kiyur v'Kanai, the Gemara says, Rashi brings. Because the Kiyur v'Kanai, they were made of copper. And from what were they made from? It states that when Moshe asked for all of the nedovas, all of the contributions for the materials of the Mishkan, of the sanctuary, and he needed copper, so the women came with their copper mirrors. In those days, they would make mirrors out of copper. Moshe did not want to accept them because he said, mirrors, this is made. Mirrors are made for vanity. And if vanity doesn't have its place in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary, so Moshe rejected them. Kodesh Baruch Hu said, take them. Chaviv and alai mikulchem, these are dearer to me than all of the other contributions. Why? Because it was in these mirrors, we're speaking here of those that went out of Egypt. During the 210 years that they were in Egypt, of which many, many of those years they were enslaved, and there was bitterness, and the men were subjected to the work of the sodeh, of the field, and the work of mortar and brick. And the Gemara tells us that there's no more difficult labor than working with mortar and brick. And they would come home totally exhausted. And the women, through these mirrors, aroused the men's interest and the men's love. And through this, the generation of children, of youth, were born in Egypt. And these were the Yetzi Mitzrayim, these were those who went out of Egypt. And if not for these, they wouldn't have been born. So therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, take these are dearer to me than all. What did he mean? Because it was through the copper mirrors that this unity was established. And the sanctuary was for unity. What do you mean they don't have a place here? They certainly do have a place here. Now when we want to reinstitute this unity at its proper level, so therefore the water must be taken from the Kiyur v'Kanai, from the fountain, which had a sheirish, which had a source in the unity by the previous matriarchs at that level. Another thing we see, that the name of Hashem was written on the parchment and put into the water. Why? Because the name of Hashem has been destroyed. When she started to act without discretion, without propriety, and started to create a destruction of the house, Kodesh Baruch Hu's name was destroyed, because it was his name that was holding them together. Now we want to use this water to reinstitute this unity. So the name of Hashem must be put into the water, in order that it can come and reinstitute, bring the unity bring the marriage on a higher level, on a proper level. The Gemara asks that the fact that we are allowed to do this is only because the Torah tells us so. Otherwise, we wouldn't be allowed to do it. Why? Because it's a negative commandment to erase Hashem's name. The name has to be in the water, but when you put it in, it becomes erased. And that's a negative commandment. So here's a special dispensation where we're allowed to do it. Sigmund asked why. Sigmund says, you see, Godel HaShalom, how great it is to pursue peace between a man and his wife. She even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Nimcha Keshmei Azeh, that he allowed his name to be erased. The Maral says something very wonderful here. He says, why did he allow his name to be erased for the sake of peace? Because it was being erased on the parchment in order that it should be reestablished in the flesh and blood. Because if they'll come back together, then the name of Hashem is rewritten on them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, better it should be erased on the parchment for the sake of peace, that it should be rewritten in human beings. So this is why it's erased. On the other hand now, she has to bring a sacrifice, that this sacrifice represents her guilt. Because regardless if she was disloyal or not, she was guilty, because she didn't, her conduct was not proper at all. What is she going with other men for? And her husband warns her and he's jealous. And she goes into seclusion, yichud. So her conduct was not proper. So even if she is innocent, she has to bring a sacrifice which is representative of her act. States that her sacrifice should be barley, and on every sacrifice usually was wheat, and every sacrifice usually we would put levona, we would put spice. Says no, on hers there must not be any spice. Now why is this? If the marriage is conducted properly, then it goes to the highest level possible, because it's, you're working with Hashem's name, it's at his level. But if it comes, this Aveda comes to Gilui Arayos, it comes to adultery or other such acts, then one must realize it sinks to the lowest level. Why to the lowest level? States that a person is made of three parts. There's his physical counterparts, the guf, there's the nefesh, the emotions, and then there's the spirit, the intellect and the spirit. There are three cardinal averes that a man is obligated to give his life on. Aveda zora, idolatry, that's the cardinal transgression of the intellect and the spirit. Shvichas domim, killing, murder, that's the cardinal transgression of the emotional part of man. Because when he kills because of anger or hatred or revenge. And then gil darayis, these are acts of adultery or incest. And this is the cardinal avera of physical man. It's because of the physical drives. Now each level is higher than the next. Physical level is the lowest level of man. Emotional level is higher. Intellectual and spiritual is higher. So it comes out in averas, in transgressions. The gilu arayis, adultery or incest, is sinking to the lowest level of man. So we have here a phenomenon. If this drive is used to create a union between man and his wife, he rises to the highest heights. where HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses his name that he used in the splitting of the sea to make them one. But if it's used not for a kedusha, for sanctity, it's used for tumah, for impurities, if it's used for aveira, then it sinks to the lowest level. And it sinks to a level which is known as an act of an animal. Because the spiritual and intellectual level that an animal doesn't have. The emotional level he has only very limited. Physical level he has. So it sinks to a level of an animal. This is why it states that by Egypt that was full of this abomination of incest or adultery or of deviations from the norms, homosexuality and so forth. So they were known as the Besar Hamorim Besorim, the flesh of donkeys, the prophet referred to them of. They were at the level of the most physical of all animals, the Hamor, the donkey. Therefore, it states that she is called a Saita. What does this word Saita mean? Rashi brings the Gemara Masechta to Saita. The word Saita means She'ein Ha'isha Ben Ha'efes At She'nichnas Abah Ruach Shtus. Saita comes from the word Shtus. Shtus means lack of intellect. When a person falls from a level of spiritual and intellectual, then he comes to such averas. In other words, this means that he or she are totally overcome merely by physical forces. Man has physical forces, he has emotional forces, he has intellectual and spiritual forces. The king of man is supposed to be his spiritual forces, where he uses all of the other forces. But someone who involves himself in these averas, so this is someone who submits totally to physical forces. Therefore they're called a Seita, which means that the seichel, the spiritual and intellectual forces have disappeared. And they have submitted themselves totally to the physical forces. For that reason, her sacrifice is barley, not wheat. Because wheat is the food, the staple of man. And barley is the staple of animals. He also saw Maisa Behema. She did an act of an animal. The same act that could be the act with the name of Hashem in it becomes an act of an animal. Therefore, her sacrifice must be Sa'ori Michael Behema, which is the food of the animal. And why no spice? Because it states that the Imos were Nikroim Livona. The matriarchs were called spices. The level of a spice, an aroma. Chazal tell us that the spices, aroma, this is for the soul. This was the level of the matriarchs. This korban, this sacrifice represents her conduct. Therefore, you do not put levaina on it. So this is very important for us to realize. And this is why the same act can be the highest act of consecration or the lowest act of an animal, all depending how one fulfills it. Therefore it states, that's why the Chazal called that when we get married, it's called Kiddushin, because we give Kiddusha to it. And the Gemara says, Kola Eichel, that's also a Mesech to say to Kola Eichel Lechem Belaini Tila Kila Bali Shazena. A person eats bread without Netila Shadayim, without properly washing his, cleansing his hands beforehand in accordance to the mitzvah. It's as if he comes upon a woman without marriage. Why? Because eating also, eating with the proper conduct and the proper approach becomes a great mitzvah. because then the spiritual forces are driving him to it. But if he eats without all of this, why? Because he's hungry. He's driven because of physical forces. And what's the great achievement? An animal also can eat because he's hungry. An animal cannot eat when the tilas are dying. An animal cannot eat with machshava. With mitzvah he can't eat. But with hunger he can. So how's man different than an animal? Both are physical acts. The difference is the netila shadayim, the preparation, the mitzvah, and the thought, and the machshava, and the spirit that goes into it. But if you extract that spirit, then it's at the same level as an animal. So it's the same as taking a woman without marriage. One final point. When it comes to this particular area of prohibited unions, that of another man's wife, there's even a further dimension. The Gemara says, it's a Gemara in Bamatzi, we once quoted in a shiur not long ago. It states that in some ways, if you take a man's wife, if you commit adultery with his wife, in some ways it's worse than spilling his blood, than killing him. The Maral explains something very deep. If you kill a man, you have killed man himself. But if you take his wife from him, you destroy the unity between he and his wife. You're doing more than that. Why? Because it states that HaKadosh Baruch Hu called Adam, Adam, only after he created Chava. Before he created Chava, Adam was not called Adam. It states that after he created Zohar Vinakeva, male and female, it says that Koresh Mom, he called their name Adam. The Gemara learns from here we see that someone who has a wife is called an Adam. Someone who doesn't have a wife is lacking. He's lacking until he has his wife. So therefore, if you kill a man, you have killed a partial man. While if you go between he and his wife, you take his wife from him, you are destroying a total man. Because man and wife together are a man in totality. This is why in the Mishnah Ovis it states that at 18 a person should seek a wife. Why 18? Because till 18 there is the self-development of he himself. 13 he becomes a man, but then he's still physically growing. At 18 he's physically mature. Now that he's physically mature, now he must seek a further perfection, which comes by the taking a wife. And this is why in Aseres HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, it states Leitirzoch, first it says you shall not kill, and then it says Leitina, if you shall not commit adultery. Killing is one level. Destroying the man's home, that's a further level. So this adds a specific dimension when it comes to this subject of adultery. Incidentally, from here to now, we can understand very well, or this will help us to understand also, what we've said over in the past from the Vilna Gaon in his Pirush on Mishlei. The Gaon asked a very good question. It says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu first created man, then he took man's rib, from the rib he fashioned Chava, the first woman, and then he gave Chava to man. Why did he have to do that? In the beginning he should have created two entities. He created one entity, divided them up into two entities. See, if he was interested in two entities, so he should have created two entities. So he says, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted two entities, because she has to be an Ezer, she has to be a help to him, person can't help himself, he needs someone else to help him. So there had to be two entities. But it had to be two entities that a perfect union could be made between them. How is it possible that from two entities can become one? So therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that originally they should come from one, in order that when they come back together, they can seek that original unity that was there with his help. Therefore, first he made one entity, then he divided them up into two, and now it's possible for them to come back into that perfect unity. These are some observations on this parsha and this all-important mitzvah. Unfortunately, the so-called modern world that we live in today, with its very shallow thinking, is not capable of understanding what the Torah is teaching here. Therefore, they can't understand what is so important about Kiddushin, Chupin Kiddushin, and what is so important about loyalty between man and a wife, and what is so wrong with affairs or adultery or well-rounded experiences and so forth and so on. And they have misled already generations of youth to the point where we live in a world today where broken homes and broken people and broken children and broken children who are children of broken parents has almost already become the norm. This is the fruits of their great wisdoms. We should be zeichet to see that the Kedushas HaTorah, the sanctity of Torah and its lights will shine forth in Klal Yisrael, and we'll see that the homes of Klal Yisrael will again retain or gain the great stature that it did or that we were accustomed to in the old days.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.